Chazar Shem Sech's Peil Perek Dalad Mishnah Beis until Perek Vov Mishnah Beis. Although when it comes to most produce, all poor people have an equal right to it, and the way it is distributed is by a first-come, first-served basis, the poor people compete over who will get it. When it comes to certain produce which is difficult to access, and therefore it will be dangerous for people to compete over it, for example, dates in a palm tree, the farmer distributes it out equally to all the poor people who are present. Now, if all of the poor people there agree that they want to compete over it instead of the owner giving it out, then they can do so. But if there's even one person who does not want to do that, then he can force the rest of them to distribute it equally because that is really the main law. And they can only do a bit differently if they all agree on it, but if even one person doesn't, then they have to do what is the normal law, which in the case of this produce is for the farmer to distribute it out equally. Mishnah Gimel, if a poor person takes some payah out of the ground, so he has acquired that payah, and then he throws it over the rest of the payah over there, because he wants to stop other people from getting that rest of the payah. Now that is certainly not allowed, because all poor people have an equal right to it, and therefore Midrabbanan, he's not only forbidden to keep the payah which he hasn't detached from the ground, but even the payah which he did detach from the ground, he loses the right to that as a punishment. Now if the person lies down over the rest of the produce, the rest of the payah, or he spreads a cloak over it, but this time he's not doing it in order to stop the other poor people from getting the payah. Rather, he thinks that he is able to acquire the payah by doing that. So we're not going to punish him, however he hasn't acquired the payah, because that's not how you acquire things. Rather, the poor people can remove him and take any of the payah which he lay down on, because that has not yet been acquired. Mishnah Dalet, because it could get very competitive among the poor people, it's forbidden to use a sickle or a spade or any dangerous tool which could potentially hurt somebody. You cannot use that in order to collect the payah, in order to avoid the danger. Mishnah Hei, Midrabbanan, the poor people are only allowed to collect the payah if the farmer or representative of the farmer is present at the time, in the field. This is to avoid the poor people from stealing produce which is not payah, and because of this, the farmer needs to appear in the field. And we had three opinions for when he should do so. According to the Tanakama, the Chachomim, he has to appear at three times during the day, no less, no more. And those three times are the early morning, so that even mothers of young children can get the payah because their young children are asleep at that time. They've got to appear in the field at midday as well, when the young people who woke up late can also get it. And also mid-afternoon, so that the old people who take a long time to get there can also access the payah. The second opinion is Rabban Gamliel, who holds that he has to come at these three times, but he can also appear in the field at other times, so that poor people have more opportunity to collect the payah. However, according to Rabbi Akiva, these three times are the maximum. He cannot appear in the field other than these three times, because if it's not a fixed time, then he might tell particular poor people, such as poor people who are related to him, he might tell them that he's going to appear in the field at such and such a time, and that he should come then and collect the payah. And that, of course, is forbidden because all the poor people have equal rights to the payah. So one cannot favour one poor person. So to avoid that, one can only come at these three fixed times, or if he wants, he can come less than the three times. According to Rabbi Akiva, we're not worried if the poor people would need to come back again, as long as it's during those three times of the day. The people of Beis Nomer, which was either a family, or it was a place, they would leave payah for the poor people in a slightly unusual way, and they were praised for it. They would leave payah at the end of each row. So they would harvest the row of the field, and then leave payah at the end of each row, which meant that they viewed each row as an individual field, because otherwise you can't just leave payah in the middle of the field. So they viewed each row of harvesting as an individual field, and this way the poor people wouldn't need to wait until the end of the harvest to collect the payah. Rather, they would be able to take payah already now. Because the obligation of most matnos aniyim, the gifts which go to the poor people, sets in at the time of the harvest, if somebody is not Jewish at the time of the harvest, even if he converts right after the harvest, before he's bundled up the produce, he's exempt from giving the matnos aniyim to the poor people, because at the time that the obligation began, he was exempt because he wasn't Jewish. The Torah says of a kutzrachem, when you, the Jews, harvest the field, then the field is obligated in maaseris, in the matnos aniyim. But if a non-Jew harvested the field, then the entire field is exempt from the matnos aniyim. And according to the Tanakama, the Chachomim, even the shikcha of the bundles, whose obligation obviously sets in after the harvest when he's bundling it up, and he was Jewish at that time, so you would think that the convert should be obligated in that shikcha at least. According to the Tanakama, he is exempt, the reason being that since he's exempt from the other type of shikcha, which is the forgotten stalks which he left in the ground, so he's also exempt from this shikcha, because they have the same source in the Torah, and therefore they have the same laws. However, according to Rabbi Yehuda, the two types of shikcha don't necessarily have the same laws, and therefore the shikcha of the bundles, since that obligation only started once he was Jewish, he is obligated to give that to the poor people. Mishnah Zayin, if at the time of the harvest, that's the critical time, that's when the obligation of the matnos aniyim applies. If at that time the field belonged to Hekdash, to the Beis HaMikdash, then it is exempt from the matnos aniyim. And again, the reason is because the Torah says Kitzircha, your harvest, which implies your personal harvest is obligated in the Matnus Aniyim, but not Hekdash. And this applies even if he redeems the field onto money after the harvest, he's exempt because at the time of the harvest it was exempt, and therefore it remains exempt even later. In Mishnah Ches, we went slightly sidetracked, and we said that the same thing applies to Maisrus, the tithes. The obligation of the Maisrus applies and begins when the fruit or the produce reaches the stage of development and ripeness that it becomes properly edible. And that's called Onas HaMaisrus. So if at the time that the produce reached its Onas HaMaisrus, the produce belonged to Hekdash, or even if it was a later stage, if at the final stage of the harvesting, what is known as Gemar Malacha, and at that stage it becomes forbidden to eat the food even as a snack temporarily, so if at either of those two times, either at the Onas HaMaisrus or at the Gemar Malacha, if it belonged to Hekdash, then it is exempt from the tithes. Mishnah Tes. A poor person is allowed to acquire payah by detaching it from the ground on behalf of another poor person. And even though by doing so, he's making the other poor people who are there lose out, he's allowed to do this because technically he could have just acquired it for himself and then given it to the other poor person. So therefore he's allowed to directly acquire it on behalf of the other person so that the ownership is immediately transferred to the other poor person. And this rule is known as Migu Dezochi Lenafshi Zochinam Lechavre. Since he could acquire it for himself, he could also acquire it on behalf of his friend. The question of our Mishnah is whether a wealthy person could do this as well. According to Rabbi Eliezer, he could, because technically even a wealthy person could make himself entitled to this payah. If he declared all of his property ownerless, he would now be poor, and then the payah would go to him. He'd be entitled to take the payah if he wants to. So since technically he is able to take that payah, even if at the moment he's not entitled to it, we still allow him to acquire it on behalf of another poor person. However, the Chachom say that since at the moment he is not in reality entitled to the payah, you can't apply the rule of Migud Zoch Lenafshe, since he can acquire it for himself. Because at the moment he can't acquire it for himself, and therefore so too he cannot acquire it for somebody else, even if that other person is poor, because he's causing the other poor people around to lose out. If a non-Jew owns land in Eretz Yisrael, according to our Mishnah, in Kinyan Nochri b'Eretz Yisrael af kia midei maiser, we say that a non-Jew who owns land in Eretz Yisrael is not actually considered the owner in terms of removing the obligation of maisrus. So if somebody buys produce from the non-Jew, he will need to separate maisrus. Now because of that, if the non-Jew decides to voluntarily give matnos aniyim, the matnos aniyim aren't considered halachic matnos aniyim because they're given by a non-Jew. Which means that just like the rest of his produce, which means that even the poor people will need to separate the tithes from the non-Jew's produce, because again, he's not considered the owner, and therefore all of his produce is obligated in maisrus, even the gifts he gives to the poor, because they're not considered halachic gifts to the poor. Now this is really the stage in the Masechta where the Mishnayos stop talking about payah and now go on to the next gift for the poor, namely leket, which are individual stalks which are dropped during the harvest. And the stalks will only become leket if they fall down during the harvest and as a result, a direct result of the harvest. So if he drops the stalks, for example, if a thorn hits him and he drops it out of pain, so there's an external factor causing him to drop it and therefore it will not be considered leket and he can keep those stalks for himself. The Mishnah then went into the two methods of harvesting in those days. One method, and this was really the more common method, was to hold some produce with one of your hands, and with the other hand hold a sickle, which has a hook-shaped blade with a handle, and he would use the sickle to slice through the produce which he is holding in his other hand. The other method was to use his actual hands to uproot it directly from the ground, and that was more commonly used for produce like onions. So if the stalks fall from the inside part of the blade, where it goes inwards, so that's where they would normally use to cut, and therefore that would be considered leket. But if it falls from the back of the blade, or from outside of the person's hand, it wouldn't be considered leket, because that's not the normal way to harvest. Now what happens if it's at the tip of the blade, if it falls from there, or if it falls from the person's fingers but not the palm of his hand? So according to Rabbi Yishmael, it's still considered the regular way of harvesting, and therefore it would be leket, but according to Rabbi Akiva, it is not leket. Finally, Mishnah Yud Aleph, if there are ant holes which are situated in the unharvested part of one's field, and the other half of the field has been harvested, and inside these ant holes there's grain. So the riper grain, which is in the holes, which means it was left in the field for longer, and it's at the top of the ant hole, so it came there recently. So that is leket, because perhaps the ants bought that from the other part of the field, which is harvested, because the grain there is recent. So it could be from the other part of the field, which has been harvested. Now, according to Rabbi Meir, even the lower ones, the lower part of the ant holes, where the grain which is less ripe is, So that implies that that grain did not come from this recent harvest. Nevertheless, according to Rabbi Meir, since there is a slight doubt and a slight chance that it did come from the other half of the field, and therefore it could be from the leket stalks of the other part of the field, even though it's a very slight chance, it does go to the poor people, and this is an exception to the general rule of Hamotzi Mechaveiro Olav Haraya. We usually say if somebody wants something from someone else, he can only get it if he can prove that he is entitled to it. However, when it comes to Matnus Aniyim, even in cases of doubt, it goes to the Aniyim, the poor people, and this is learned from a pasuk in the Torah, which teaches this exception to the general rule of Hamotzi Mechaveiro Olav Haraya. Perek Hey, the first couple of Mishnayos of the fifth Perek brought three different cases where leket stalks were mixed together with non leket stalks. The first case is where the farmer is at fault, and he piles up all his grain on top of an area of the field where the leket has not yet been gathered from by the poor. As a punishment for doing that, we say that the entire lower level, the entire bottom layer, which is touching the ground, goes to the poor people, even the stalks which we know as a fact came from the grain which is not leket. As a punishment, we say that the entire bottom layer goes to the poor people. The second scenario is where wind blows some of the farmer's stalks onto the ground and therefore it gets mixed with some leket stalks. So here the farmer is not at fault, so he's not going to get punished. The only question is, how do we estimate how much to give to the poor? So according to the Chachomim, we give to the poor person the amount that is estimated to fall as leket from this particular field. However, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, we give him the estimated amount which would fall from an average field, but not this particular field. And the Yerushalmi explains that is 1/45 of the produce. Mishnah Beis went a bit sidetracked, and it talked about shikha, and the Mishnah said that if an individual stalk was overlooked when it was harvested, so therefore it should be shikha. However, it's very close to the unharvested part of the field. So if it's close enough that it can be held together with part of the stalks of the unharvested part, and it can be harvested in one action of the sickle, then it's considered close enough that we can view it as part of the unharvested part of the field, and therefore it would not be considered shikha. We view it as if the farmer just hasn't got up to there yet. Now the second half of Mishnah Beis went back to the cases where leket was mixed together, and if one leket stalk is mixed with the farmer's stalks, so we know that one of the stalks is leket, but we don't know which one. So the farmer has to give one stalk to the poor person, of course, but that stalk might not be leket, and therefore it is obligated in the maaseres, in the tithes. So the owner should separate another stalk from a totally different pile, which he knows is not leket, and separate that on behalf of this stalk, which he's giving to the poor person. Now, if he doesn't have another pile, then he should separate two stalks from this pile on behalf of the stalk which he is giving to the poor person, so that either way, one of those two stalks is not leket, and therefore it would work to separate the maaseres from there on behalf of the other stalk which he is giving to the poor person. Now, according to Rabbi Eliezer, this doesn't really work, because it's all very nice that you've given the leket to the poor person, or you've given a stalk to the poor person, but it's very possible, and in fact likely, that the stalk which was leket is mixed together with the farmer's produce, which means that the farmer now can't benefit from his entire produce because there's leket there. And therefore, before you give over the stalk to the poor person, you should temporarily give over the entire mixture to him as a matona amanas lahachzer, which means that the gift will go back to him after they've dealt with all the maisers, etc. But this way, the owner is guaranteed that once he's got it back, there's no leket involved anymore because the poor person gave it to him. Mishnah Gimel, according to Rabbi Meir, it's forbidden to harvest a good quality species together with a bad quality species. The example the Mishnah gave was teifer, some sort of grass pea. And the reason for this is because usually the farmer's concentration gets worse as he goes further into the harvest. But in this situation, he'll make sure that he sort of uses up his concentration on the good ones, and then he won't concentrate properly when he's harvesting the bad ones. This means that he'll drop far less good quality produce, which means that he is causing a loss to the poor people. However, the Chachom say that he is allowed to do this, because every farmer's concentration levels are different. He might not concentrate more for the better quality ones. We don't know, and therefore he is allowed to do this. Mishnah Dalet, if a wealthy person was traveling and temporarily he had no money, so he was forced to take the Matnus Aniyim, he's allowed to do so. However, when he gets back to his home and he is reunited with his money, he needs to compensate the poor people from the town where he received the Matnus Aniyim, because the fact that he took Matnus Aniyim meant that less was available for them, and therefore he needs to compensate them. That is according to Rabbi Eliezer. However, according to the Chachomim, since he was poor at the time that he took it, because he couldn't access his money, even if later on he gets back to his money, we just view him as a poor person who later became wealthy. But at the time that he received the Matnus Aniyim, he was poor, and therefore he does not need to compensate the other poor people. Mishnah Hey, if a poor person exchanges part of the Matnus Aniyim which he received with a wealthy person, so now the wealthy person has the Matnus Aniyim, and they are exempt, they are still exempt from the tithes. The transfer of ownership does not affect that. However, the wealthy person's produce, which he is giving to the poor person, is obligated in tithes. But it's not fair for him to give produce to the poor person, which the poor person then can't benefit from the entire mixture. and therefore the wealthy person should first separate the tithes and only then give the full amount, which is valued at the same amount as the matnos aniyim. He should give that to the poor person, who will then not need to separate the tithes. Now, if two people rent a field, and they work the field from beginning to end, and they have an arrangement known as arisus, which is when the people renting the field and working the field will receive a percentage of the crop of that year. So because their wages are very much dependent on the field, they are considered like partial owners of the field, which means that even if they are poor, they are not allowed to collect the matnos aniyim from the field, just like the owner of a field is not allowed to take his own matnos aniyim, because the Torah says you have to give them to other people. However, if there are two people who did this together, then each one of them can give the matnos aniyim to the other one, and that way they'll be able to be partial owners of the field, but at the same time receive matnos aniyim from that field. Now, if somebody doesn't really rent a field, but he agrees to harvest the field, and his wages is also a percentage of the field. Again, he's considered a partial owner, and therefore he cannot take the matnos aniyim. But if the deal is that he's not going to receive a percentage of the field, but he'll receive a percentage of the harvested crop. So in that case, he's not considered an owner of the field, he just gets part of the crop. So in that scenario, he would be able to take the matnos aniyim. However, when it comes to Maaser Oni, he's not able to take that, because the obligation of Maaser Oni only applies at the end of the harvest, and in terms of the harvested produce, he is considered a partial owner of that. So he can't take Maaser Oni, which comes from the already harvested produce. Mishnah Vav, if somebody sells his land with the crop attached to it, that means that at the time of the harvest, he's no longer the owner, and therefore he can't take matnos aniyim from that field. Whereas the buyer can't, because he is the owner at the time of the harvest. As we have mentioned, all poor people have this equal right to the matnos aniyim. And because of that, one can't stipulate the wages for a worker to be from the matnos aniyim. For example, the leket, to allow a worker's son to pick up all the leket. He has no right to do that, because the leket belongs to the poor people and not the owner of the field. Similarly, if you only allow some poor people to collect it, or even if you help a particular poor person to take the matnos aniyim, that is against considered stealing from the poor. Now, from Mishnah Zayin, the Masechta begins to talk about shikra, the overlooked or the forgotten produce, which the farmer has to leave for the poor. Now, if the owner of the field is in the field at the time of the bringing of the bundles away from the field, then even if he's not the one who is actually doing the work, the bundles which are forgotten are only considered shikra if both the workers and the owner forget them and overlook them. Because the Torah says, when you harvest, your harvest. So when you harvest is referring to the one who is doing the harvesting, the worker. But then it says your harvest, which is referring to the owner. So we learn from there that it's only considered shikra if they both forget about it. Now, if the cause of their forgetting was the fact that poor people hid those bundles, then that's not considered shikra. It's not forgotten. There are other factors which are causing them not to see it and not to remember it, and therefore it's not considered shikra. And finally, Mishnah Ches taught us that the obligation of shikra only applies at one stage of the harvesting process. This is learned from the Pasuk, which compares shikra to the harvest itself. So just like the harvest is a one-time thing, you only cut the produce off the ground once. So too, at only one stage of the harvesting process can the bundles become shikra. And that stage is when the bundles is transported to the final place, the Gemar Melacha, the place where it will be threshed. Which means that if you first bundle the produce into small bundles and then take it to a big stack, it will only be obligated in the big stack. And in fact, if you're going to take it from the big stack to the threshing floor, then it will only be obligated at that stage if you forget them at the stack, if you forget to bring it to the threshing floor. Perek Vav, according to Beis Shammai, if somebody makes something hefka, he makes it ownerless, but only for the poor people to take it. According to Beis Shammai, that works, and therefore that produce will be exempt from Trumas and Maaseros, the various tithes, just like any ownerless produce is. And they learn this from a Pasuk, whereas Beis Hillel say that the mechanism of making something ownerless only works if it becomes ownerless for anybody to take, even wealthy people, and therefore this would not be valid hefka, and even the poor people cannot take it, and therefore certainly it would still be obligated in the Trumas and Maaseros. Now, Mishnah later on says that if you leave behind, if you overlook three, and according to some people, four bundles, which are next to each other, then they don't become shikra. Now, what happens if all of the bundles in the field were the size of a kav, and there was one bundle which was a big bundle? It was four kav. And you forget that bundle. So according to Beis Shammai, since all of the bundles in the field are one kav, we view this big bundle also in terms of one kav. And therefore, even though it's four kav, that means we look at it as four different bundles, which means that they will not become shikra, so this big bundle can be kept by the owner. However, Beis Hillel say no, this bundle is one bundle, and we don't view it as separate, We don't view it in terms of one kav, and therefore it is shikha, just like the normal halacha is when you forget one bundle, so it would go to the poor people. Mishnah Beis, if the bundle which somebody forgets is in a significant part of the field, for example, it's by the stone wall, or the big stack, or the animals, or where the plowing tools are kept. So according to Beis Shammai, since you're going to go to those locations later on, and since those locations are very significant, even if you temporarily forget about that bundle, because you're almost guaranteed to remember it later on, it doesn't become shikha. However, Beis Hillel say that it's not considered memorable enough, and therefore it is considered shikha, and therefore would go to the poor people.